woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, no fake stacks and jacks. Time to know. The quick Pappas on the board. SP futures up 575. NASDAQ futures up 67 as it tries to rebound from yesterday's minus 512. That was a shocker. Almost 3%. It's a pretty bizarre day. Dow was actually up yesterday as United Healthcare continues to go up every single day. Healthcare stocks are doing fine. They're keep raising the prices, and everybody keeps paying. So there we go. Do we have Mr. Murphy?
Yes, you do, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad.
I don't know if you weren't exactly staring at the market like me all day yesterday, but that was interesting, wasn't it? All our number seven stocks that everybody is, you know, putting their whole portfolio behind, all of a sudden got their ass kicked, but not today. Bouncing back a little bit, but not all that much. They're all up. I've got Tesla up 250. You got Meta up 4. Meta was down like 20 something yesterday. They were the biggest loser. Nvidia was down some. It was some combination of didn't Biden come out and say something to the effect of they're going to be more concerned about people who are getting the chips that can be military grade or whatever to China, and then the Trump crowd came out and said Taiwan was going to have to pay for their own defense. Mike, even if they come up with all the money, how long does it take to get a defense that could withhold China? About 10 years?
Yeah, I don't think that Taiwan can come up with a defense to defend itself from China. I mean, I think yesterday was just a sell-off, Tom. I might be mistaken, but, you know.
Well, it's pretty focused. It's somewhat of a rotation. The Dow stocks, I mean, it really is, you know, I wonder why some of the retailers have had massive week. In Home Depot, I mean, if the Fed drops the rates 0.25%, what's everybody going to do? Drop the rates on the credit cards 10% and everybody's going to run over to Home Depot? I don't think it affects anybody like you and me at all, does it?
No, I agree with you, Tom. If the Fed cuts, but then that will be interpreted as a political move, so I don't know that they can cut, but everybody keeps thinking that's what's going to happen. So.
Well, I think they're already pouring money in the system. I mean, what's happening to the dollar? And then Janet Yellen came out yesterday and said something about she's very concerned about a dollar collapse and how Bitcoin and these things are taking over. She's the one who collapsed it. What am I missing?
Right. You know, they just lack common sense. It doesn't make any sense to me at all how they react to whatever problem they have.
Especially when they're the ones who caused it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's a... are you nervous at all? Who's the guy who runs Citadel? And why do I always keep forgetting the game?
Ken Griffin.
Are you somewhat concerned that now these people... I actually somewhat agree with Musk's position on parents knowing if your kids change their sex when they're in school. But the idea that just because these guys have money now, whatever they say politically gets front and center. And we have, you know, brilliant guys on this show, and we have to, you know, essentially pay to be on. Isn't it kind of weird? I mean, just because you have dough doesn't make you a political genius, does it?
No, but, you know, unfortunately, the fact that you have money gives you a platform. So,
well, this incredible concentration of wealth, I guess, you know, if you go back to the to Europe, the nobles had all the wealth and they had all the power, right? Is that our destiny, Luke? Like they said in Star Wars, is that our destiny? Looks like it, doesn't it?
It certainly, it could be. I mean, I guess we're becoming a, you know, this is probably a little far-fetched, but maybe a feudal society. I don't know.
I'm not so sure it's all that far-fetched. You know, I did a, you were in the 1991-ish, 92-ish, were you in Germany?
Yes, we left Germany in, we went there, no, excuse me, we were not. We were still at West Point. No, we were in New Jersey, and we went back to Germany in 93.
Because we did a, when I say we, Dr. J and I did a series of seminars over there on option trading. I say over there, we were in Austria, and then we went to Germany. Interesting trip. I could tell some stories, but I won't. We had a third guy with us. And when I was in Germany, Austria was, as you know, that's even more kind of bizarre. But in Germany, I got this feeling that these big banks, not this feeling, I'm looking at all these people's accounts, big banks owned an awful lot of the common stock of the businesses. And it was an amazing concentration of wealth in some people. And a lot
right,
of,
and... Did you go to Frankfurt, Tom? Is that
yes.
where you went?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We were in Vienna, then we took the train to Frankfurt, which was an adventure. Why is everything with me always an adventure? Maybe because of the people I hang around. I don't know. But I told you the story on the train, didn't I? What Dr. J had gotten the Euro pass, and this other guy gets us a... Because he was supposed to be our tour guide, right? Because his wife knew German. Why he came with, I don't know, because he didn't know German at all, other than Ein Bier. But anyway, he's with us, and he gets these tickets, and he can't get a ticket. And so I go up to the guy, and I don't know German for squat, or an Austrian, and I say, you know, we want a train to Frankfurt. The guy goes, a train to Frankfurt, it doesn't leave for 6 hours. He goes, but, you know, we have a fast train to Frankfurt. Of course, they weren't going to volunteer any information. I said, why wouldn't we want the fast train? Well, you probably would. I said, okay, then. So we get tickets for the fast train, which leaves in like 20 minutes. We hustle out, get on the thing. Pretty neat train. So we buy the tickets, and I'm thinking, these tickets aren't all that expensive, right? They should be more expensive. So Dr. J's got the first class thing. You know those real cool cabins where the aisle is down the side?
Right, so he had the first class cabin yeah. with his Eurail pass yeah. or whatever he had.
So
right?
We all pile into this cabin with him, the two of us.
Yeah, can't do that.
Yeah, well, we did. And then, but the problem was the night before, they had this Guns N' Roses concert in Vienna. So the train station is packed with these, I'll use the term cretins. I don't know what they were. But it was the oddest group I think I've ever seen. And you know, over there, their issue with plumbing, which I won't go into, is kind of, it's not the same as ours, right? So the bathroom, the urinal, is this wall, like a flat wall, with water running down the wall. And you essentially pee into the water. And I'm sitting there going, who the hell designed this? Meanwhile, I'm taking care of business, and all of a sudden his hands are coming over my shoulder. Guys are putting their hands in the water and using it to take, like, a bath.
And right, going, they're washing their hands and semi-taking a shower.
Yeah,
right?
And I said, I'm not so sure. This isn't somewhat recycled water. Anyway, so we get on the train, and conductor comes back and he says, these are not first class tickets. And I, for the two of us, and I go, look, I had no intention of going sitting in coach with these other people, right? Not that I'm not an elitist, I just wasn't with that group. So I say to the guy, all right, look, we got dollars, we got krona, we got shillings, what do you want? The dude goes, well, I need like 50 bucks or something, you know, so I give the guy $50. Well, now we're over the price of where the ticket would have been, but I'm okay with it, right? So we cross the border into Germany. Conductor comes in. Guess what he says? These are not first class tickets.
You're in first class again,
yeah.
Right?
I know. I just paid your other guy. Well, that got you to the border. Now you got to deal with me. the guy must have told that idiot in the back there he's willing to pay to stay in that spot. I just I just hosed him. Now you can go back and hose him. So you could go back and hose him. Anyway, hey, John, how are you? Anyway, Mike, the feeling I got was there was
morning, John.
There was such a concentration of power, and you looked at the different industries, and there were four or five banks that seemed to control everything. And by the way, they owned 60-70% of the stock of some of the companies that you and I are familiar with. And because I was looking at all these, you know, portfolios, and it seemed like there was a lot of industries with three or four companies in every industry, basically with their nose so far up the ass of government you couldn't find it. And I'm sitting there going, I hope this system never comes over to our place. And sure enough, what do we have? Three or four banks that kind of control everything. And it seems like there's a creep on this. Or am I just being goofy? Again.
I'm not sure, Tom. I do know that the Europeans, and particularly the Germans, do a much better job of incorporating labor onto their management boards. For instance, you know, labor participates in all the management talks, and that way their workers get a better deal, but then the company gets a better deal too. So, and I think the banks have forced that so that companies can't go on, or labor unions can't go on strike.
Are they actual labor unions like ours, or are they different?
No, they are labor unions like ours. The people pay dues, and but then when they negotiate a contract, they negotiate their people onto the board.
But I got.
I think almost all the car manufacturers have that sort of setup, and I bet you the other big firms do too.
But it seemed like the entrepreneurial spirit among the young people was not at all like it was here. I mean, it still is here to a certain extent, but they just waited in line. I mean, if you worked for a place and you were a young attorney, you didn't really make any money until you were in your 30s and 40s, and it was really, I mean, structured, wouldn't you say, John? Is that the term? I mean,
yeah.
You didn't mean the thought of any one of these kids running out and forming their own law firm. That was like the furthest thing from their mind. I didn't sense any kind of entrepreneurial spirit. Like maybe we could make a new bank or something. What do you mean? These guys got it all. They're the bank. They always will be. They always, you know, they always have been. It just seemed a little different. I mean, I don't know how I'd even describe it, but.
Well, it is a little different, Tom. And people in the universities there, there are career students. You know, they will keep going to school until they're 35. And then finally they'll graduate. They'll keep either switching subjects or adding subjects on. And there are plenty of people that have done that for years. And then they finally go to work when they're 35, 40. And then they work for about 20 years, and that's it.
Wow. That was, Jen, when you were, was there some, when you were in school at the University of Chicago, Mike, there was some of that. I was in the business school, but I was fortunate enough because, you know, you and I together taking enough economics courses at Notre Dame that I had placed out of two of the economics courses. So instead of 11 courses out of the 20 you had to take in business, you had to take 20 no matter what. And you could never just get out. You never pay them less. You know, you only take 18. They were strict on the 20. But I was able to take 7 or 8 courses over in the Department of Economics. Talk about a different world. I mean, in business, you wanted to do your 20, you wanted to get the hell out of there and get a job. In economics, those guys were there forever. I was in class with guys who were 35, who were still taking a class, then they'd teach a class. Maybe they might even have a job. But still, they went back and took like one class every quarter, every other quarter or something. That's a phenomenon. You know, we never saw it in Notre Dame, and clearly wasn't.
Well,
in
were they working to get a doctorate, Tom, or something?
I think so. One of the guys who, when I first started in this business, there was one, talk about computer systems in the ancient days. If you wanted to get on the machine and look for spreads and options and what the prices were, there was something called a Moncheck Weber. Well, the problem with that thing is if you weren't here at 6:30, if you're on the machine, the guy next to you got on that machine, it all came, you know more about this than me, it all came from the mainframe, so the thing would slow down. So when you got 30 people on them, you might as well, you know, go on and have breakfast. They wouldn't even move. Well, this guy, Steve Schwartz, introduced something called the Schwartzatoren, which actually the calculations took place in individual machines. So it was a massive revelation in the industry. And so He was in my history of economic thought class. This big, huge guy with his long string of hair. I'm going, that's Steve Schwartz. And the guy was a genius. Yet he was taking an economic thought course with me at the University of Chicago. And he sat there and for the 2 quarters. And I never put two and two together. It was the same guy, but it was. But he had to be 35, 40. And he was
right. Well, was he developing the algorithms that they use now?
No. All the formulas were already done. All the Black-Scholes and all those things were all done. But the idea was that when you turned on your machine, it wasn't all coming from a mainframe. So if you sat down next to me and you got on yours, mine slowed down because it was all coming from the same spot. But what he did is all the calculations were done on the machine, and all you were getting was a quote feed, which the quote feed comes fast no matter what. But it was the mathematics in that thing were way better, different than the ones now. I mean, you could put that thing on a... You either put it on, like, dummy math, where it would tell you, like, an option's worth, 4.25, or you could put it on smart math, and it'd be worth, 4.23.5 or something. You know, I mean, he had amazing calculation power in the thing. Maybe the guys at University of Chicago helped him with that. I don't know. It could have been. I never really talked to the dude, but anyway, he was. There were people in the economics school that were in their 30s. I mean, I think they... Go ahead, John.
There are quite a few partnerships. I don't know how much it's changed. I suspect it's changed quite a bit as the cost of courses has skyrocketed. But where you have advanced management programs that your employer would put you through, or to fill in gaps in whatever bachelor's degree you had gotten, and you were more useful to your employer if you had advanced training, and it also gave you better bargaining power for advancement. Salary increases and so on, and I think the same wasn't true in the liberal arts probably at all, but in things like economics and in accounting and everything else, the more advanced courses were attractive to employers who wanted their people to be up to date and have better credentials and so on, and they were happy to pay for it too. And I benefited from that in the last year of law school too, where my employer picked up the tab. But I don't think that's the same now, and I don't know how extensive it was across the board in the job market, but I think certainly the University of Chicago had a lot of people who would love to have their employees going there and bettering themselves and getting another credential added to their name. When times were good, of course. I don't think it's quite that good anymore for that.
Well, I would say that the stuff I took in economics, other than being something I've always been interested in, and it's food for stocks and jacks. None of this stuff made any difference in business. I mean, the business stuff did, but who cares if I could recite to you how long the Industrial Revolution took in Japan versus Britain? I mean, I don't know what board meeting that goes in necessarily, but it's fascinating. I got a question without becoming too political, although it's very difficult to not do that these days. Both the Biden's announcements and the Trump campaign announcement yesterday, whether it's just designed to get votes, which everything a politician says is designed to get votes, I guess. My concern, and it always is on the money side, if I knew that Trump was going to say, or somebody, or Biden, was going to disparage Taiwan yesterday, I would have immediately bought puts in NVIDIA. Now, I'm getting to be such a suspicious old codger that I can't believe people aren't doing that. But these utterances, I won't even call them statements from these idiots, these utterances are absolutely tradable on. And I can't believe... Well, I'll ask you guys the question. I asked my two attorney and one judge buddy last night. I said, which would you rather have? A politician that's crooked, or a politician that is totally clueless that the stuff he says is market moving? Would you rather have him smart enough to trade it and make money on it, or would you have him so dumb he doesn't even know what he's doing? And not one of the three had an opinion. They're like, that's the hardest question anybody's ever asked me. What do you guys think?
I'd look for a mix, Tom.
Well, you're going to split the baby?
Yeah, to the extent you can at all, but... I don't want somebody who's totally clueless, and I don't want somebody who's totally in on it. But I think you need somebody who really does have a sense of
Wait a minute.
It doesn't assess on either side to get what you want. But
Dan, George Washington and Solomon are dead.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's breaking news.
Yeah. So, I mean, how could the Trump camp not know that saying that Taiwan is on their own, essentially, is not going to be a problem for the chip makers for the day? And how the same thing with Biden. I mean, how does he not know, or somebody there not know, that when you say something like we're going to stop these shipments over there or make it harder for people to ship stuff over there, that's not a negative shot across the bow of the chip makers? I mean, he's kind of, and they don't seem to have any rules against trading, and nobody's ever going to track them down. I mean, it bugs me, because the people who lose money are all people that I know, and the people who make money are people I don't know. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know. You guys have anybody in an opinion? It really isn't an opinion there. It's just a statement, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I don't have a problem with statements saying that our allies, need to participate and participate to a greater extent in their defense than they have. I think that's just common sense in a way.
Well, we probably could find this out. I bet Mike sure could. Do we know for a fact that the increase in military budgets during the Trump administration versus the Biden administration, do we know it was up? It moved higher under the Trump administration. I actually read an article last week that said they've spent more, they've increased more under the Biden administration than under Trump. I mean, are we ever? I don't know that, but wouldn't.
Yeah, but what are they? What's the money going to, Tom? In the Biden administration's budget, is it going to, DEI initiatives?
No, I'm talking
to weapons.
I'm talking about the European participation from NATO.
The European participation has gone up because of Ukraine, because the Russians invaded Ukraine.
Okay, I get that, but what I'm saying is if we're going to go back to what's the deal supposed to be, Mike? They're supposed to spend 2% of their GDP
Their GDP. That's correct.
But if you listen to the drivel on one side, it's like they owe us money. They don't. They're supposed to be 2% of their GDP, and most of them are over that now, right?
I don't know about that, but they have made considerable progress. But let's look at Lithuania's GDP or Estonia's GDP or any of the other Baltic state, Latvia. 2% of their GDP is nothing.
Well, yeah.
It's France and Germany that have to contribute, and now Germany has said that they're going to give they're going to cut their support to Ukraine in half now. So,
But the Ukraine support is not the same as spending 2% of your GDP on your defense, correct? They're separate things?
Yes, they are separate initiatives, yes.
I mean, from between now and November, all we're going to hear is a bunch of crap from both sides. And somewhere along the line, I just like this. Wait a minute, what that guy just say? Is that even close to being right here? Anyway, S&P Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 66. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Rick Pappas on the board. S&P Futures up 575. NASDAQ Futures up 72. A little bit of a tone difference than yesterday. Dow is actually down today. It was up yesterday. That's kind of weird. And we have the over in Europe. Let's see what we have over there. They're up. They were ECB rate decision is today. Volvo's up 7%. They seem to be doing pretty good selling electric. Mostly, they're 48% of their cars are electric. DAX up 34.2%. FTSE up 47.6. CAC around up 37.5. Over in Asia, different sort of thing. Nikkei down 971. That's 2.5%. Still hanging in there over 40,000 though. 40,126. Hang Seng up 39, but still mired under 18,000, 17,778. Shanghai up 14, 29.77. They're trying to make it back to 3,000. We'll see if they do. We had Russell talking yesterday about how the debt loads over there, and he's not real bullish on China. U.S. yesterday, this is a mixed bag. Dow up 243. Most of that was United Health. Stocks up like 60 bucks in 2 days. Nice to see those guys are making dough. S&P down 78. 1.4%, and NASDAQ was down 512, 2.8. That's the worst day since 2022, so that was a long time ago. Russell was even down. It's been really hot lately. Russell's even down 24 points, 1%, after being up 3% like 2 days in a row. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.19. The Bund up 2 basis points, 244. Japan up 1, 104. Oil down 6 cents, 82.79. Again, nudged up near the top end of this range. Doesn't seem like it wants to break out, but it's hanging in these low 80s. The high 70s seems like maybe the past here for a while. Brent down 10 cents, 84.98. Natural gas up a penny, 205. RBOB unchanged, 250. Gold up 750, 24.67. Keeps sneaking up there. Silver, which was down yesterday, is up today, 25 cents, 30.63. Copper down 7 cents, 4.33. The dollar, which has been causing a lot of this, the euro is unchanged at 109.3. Again, a ways from the 108 or high 107s it has been. British pound, 129.8, trying to get to 130, which it hasn't been in a long time. Japan, 156.44. Now, that's down huge from the 161 the other day. So the dollar has retreated against the yen pretty substantially. Bitcoin up 58 bucks, 64,726. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? You don't have to worry about sports. Yesterday's the slowest day in sports of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, it was slow. Morning, everybody. 6:38 here in Chicago. 68 degrees right now, high of 72. Partly sunny, cooler, and less humid today. Phoenix, 92 degrees right now, 115 high there. Hot. Clouds, some sunshine. Watch out for dehydration risk and heat stroke risk.
Those aren't good.
Traffic. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 18 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 39 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes. And the Ryan from 95th is 20 minutes. Inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan. That just updated. I'll get back to you on that one. Sports news. Bears signed Caleb Williams, finally, for his 4 years. Fully guaranteed $39 million contract. And in golf, we've got the Open starting, and Scheffler is the favorite, and he is, let's see, Rory, Schauffele, and Åberg are also among the favorites to win. So I got, Chief, back to you.
Well, you know what my grumpy old Irish buddy in the Tripoli said about Rory? He's no Irishman, he's from the north. What do you think of that, Mike, John?
Most of the people in the north want people not to be saying that anymore. They think it's one big happy family now.
Yeah, well, you know how grumpy old Irish dudes are. Hey, I misspoke yesterday. Imagine that. I said that nobody had gotten a 100% vote in the Hall of Fame from the Baseball Writers of America, and I was wrong. Mariano Rivera did it in 2019. Now, why it took to 2019, I don't know, but he's the first and only one. There's some people who have gotten 100% from the Veterans Committee, but nobody from the Baseball Writers. Does that mean you have to be from New York? Well, Babe Ruth was from New York. He didn't get 100%. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. Well, somebody probably didn't like that Babe Ruth drank too much, so who knows?
Well, he couldn't have been a bar owner.
Yeah, that's true.
I got a question for you. There's one other person that we don't know what the count was, and I will ask you guys, who might that be? We think it might be 100%, but we're not sure. Lou Gehrig went in by voice acclaim. Now, do you think one gnome in there murmured no, so he wasn't 100% either, or are you going to give him the 100%?
I think Gehrig would get the 100%, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, Ty Cobb didn't. Bob Gibson didn't. So Willie Mays didn't.
Made a lot of people angry sometimes with the high spikes and things like that.
Willie Mays didn't.
Well, yeah. Well,
all right.
It was probably somebody from Cleveland that didn't like the fact that Willie Mays made that great catch.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking yesterday. They were asking me about – we talked yesterday about what team – there's only one team that has a player at every position in the Hall of Fame. And it turns out to be the Giants. I immediately guessed the Yankees like everybody else. Or guys last night all guessed the Cardinals. But it's the third base position. It's the tough one. There's only like 19 third basemen. And most of them aren't even – a lot of these guys, the third basemen were in the last 20 years. After that, there was like not very many. In the last few years, they had Adrian Beltre from the Rangers. They had Scott Rolen from the Phillies. I think we had Chipper Jones somewhere in here too. I think, with the not a whole lot. Chipper Jones went in 2018, and then Deacon White. Deacon White was in the Buffalo Bisons. That was one of the that was an old National League team. That's pretty scary. Anyway, just kind of going down. This was Ron Siano, 2012. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of them. Some of them, most of the guys are way back. Judd Wilson, the Philadelphia Stars. Who did they become? I never heard of that team. Did you? Actually, no. I think they were a Negro League team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a lot of those, the Newark Eagles, those guys were all. Anyway, going through this Hall of Fame stuff is fairly interesting. But I guess are you guys concerned, like, on both sides? And the weekend before, I had two people, sorry, John, from the right, were giving me all kinds of crap about the Strategic Oil Reserve. And I'm sitting there going, I have no idea about the Strategic Oil Reserve thing. We talked about it, 4 months ago, John, when somebody, or how long ago? Yeah. Turns out in the last, like, 2 years, they've added 25 million barrels to the thing. What is everybody talking about? And why is that even an issue? It's really amazing what people dig up and say. Strategic Oil Reserve is like, it's like a phantom. How much should be in there? There's no law that says it should be 300, 400, 500. Yet if you're politically one side or the other, people chew on this thing like if it's a sandwich. I mean, what has to be in there? There's oil coming in and out of that thing for the last 30 years, and people don't even tell you half the time what's coming in and going out.
Well, I'd say that let there be enough in there after we sell, the Chinese their quota, which Biden is doing, so that we're not left high and dry in the event of any kind of a disruption. But, I mean, the idea of selling it to anybody, I think, is something that needs to be done judiciously and not very... not recklessly, and not to people who are our enemies. So I don't know what the floor amount should be, or when it should reach a crisis stage, if there's more outflow than inflow. But at least manage it more intelligently than we're doing.
Well,
agree with John, Tom. They're not managing it properly, and they're manipulating it to lower the price of oils to satisfy the American populace, and that's just wrong, manipulating the price of oil by selling out of the strategic reserve.
Well,
I agree.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, in the last, I'm looking at from July 12, 2024, back to
I'll chime in as your commodities person.
Yeah, but then,
it's probably about just over half is where we were before pre-pandemic.
Well, I mean, but we are, I'm looking at the three-year chart, and we were down to, on July 23, we hit a bottom. Since July 23, we're back up a whole bunch. But it used to be...
not really.
Well, we're up 10%.
That's like, I think they're, how many, like 600 million or 700 million barrels COVID and before, and now we're somewhere around 350 or
373.
Yeah.
And we were at 346.
So that means the Strategic Oil Reserve is half what it was before Biden came into office. So
Okay.
And just we should, John stated it, and we shouldn't be selling to our potential adversaries. That's ridiculous.
But when Biden came into office, and again, I'm not debating the numbers. I'm just saying
You are debating.
I'm debating the conclusions based on it. When Biden came into office, and this has nothing to do with him, it has to do with the industry. We were doing 11.1 million barrels a day. Now we're doing 13.2. So if we're doing 2 million barrels a day more than we were 3 years ago, and again, I'm not saying Biden did that, do we really need this thing filled up? I don't know.
I would say we do, because if we go to war, then where's the oil going to come from?
Okay. We got to drill for it.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's no number that seems to be. Why doesn't Congress or somebody, they're the ones that built the damn things, why don't they say, we're going to maintain $600 million, and these are the only three reasons why you can take it out?
They're more susceptible to the political pressure to, sell it off or, flood the market when, the price is rising and, keep their constituents happy. I don't know if they're in the best position to do any of this.
Yeah, these we're grasping kind of we're making arguments. Yeah, I would say it's down a little bit, and it looks to me like they're doing about 2 million barrels a month, putting back in there. Is that for 1.5 million? Is that enough? It's probably fast enough. I don't know. What do you guys think? Should it be 10 a month?
Well, as long as the price of oil is over 80, it's helping the Russians. We need to get the oil prices way down. Despite the numbers going up, the price of oil is still good.
Well,
it's so that the Russians can maintain their war effort. That price has got to come down.
Well, the reason why we're going from 11.1 to 13.2 a day is because the price of oil is up, right? We're producing more here. And this all intertwines is my point. It all kind of intertwines. I mean, if we drop the price of oil to $50, what does that do to our industry here?
It might open up more drilling opportunities. Well, no, it wouldn't. That doesn't make sense. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm saying Mike, you and I sat enough classes together. These questions are so complicated. And then all of a sudden you see somebody flashing, we're not on the campaign trail on either side. You sit there and go, did that person even read the report? And yet they catch fire, don't they? I mean, anyway, it's a strange world we're in, and I guess we have to put up with it till the election. What do you make of the Democrats pushing off their vote, the nomination vote, a couple of weeks?
I think very soon Biden will say that he's not running for medical reasons. He gave himself an out yesterday, and that's what's going to happen.
Right.
How bad do you think he is? You think he's got Parkinson's?
I don't know about that. He's just not capable of campaigning to the extent that he's going to need to. And now the congressional guys and the Senate guys are worried about their own seats. They don't want the red wave. So we'll see I think he's done with. So
I think
I agree. I figured, some time ago that Biden would not be the candidate. I wasn't sure how that would come about. Originally the idea of the virtual nomination process was because Ohio had its deadline where they had to have a candidate nominated within a certain number of days before the election in order for Ohio to have ballots printed with the name on it. And that forced Democrats to go to this other plan of having a virtual, Zoom conference kind of nomination process before the convention, which is what they're going ahead with now. But the Ohio, glitch has been resolved, so there isn't that kind of limitation on it anymore.
John, was it new?
Guys, Unpredicted, the betting website for the whatever, pretty much. They have Trump at 65 cents, Harris is now 26 cents, and then Biden 17 cents.
John, is that thing in Ohio, was that new? The original?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. The states have always had, their own take on deadlines for, what's our ballot going to look like and where are we getting our information from. But I don't know when this was instituted. It was certainly within the power of any state to do this really at any time. But, you know, I can remember Democratic conventions. The one in 68 was, you know, pretty much the same time in August. I think it was the third week. So it isn't unusual for the Democrats to have their convention at that time. I'm not sure how this happened with Ohio, but somebody was asleep at the switch at the DNC that they, you know, should have thought of this when they scheduled their convention. But there's a lot of disaffected Democrats who don't want, you know, this stuff done before the convention, and they're looking for a convention that is kind of like the old ones, the one they haven't had since 1952, where there's, you know, a complete, you know, opening up of the process. They better be careful what they ask for, because this time around, I don't think that's going to be a very pretty process at all.
Well, I'm not sure it ever would be, but is there any state that doesn't let the Democrats, I looked at this once, and John, you probably know more than me, but to get on a ballot, the two parties are greased in at every state, right? I mean, they could just put Democratic candidate and Republican candidate on there for damn. And if you or I or Mike wanted to run, I mean, we got to hustle over the place and get petitions and everything and all kinds of crap to get somebody else. Some states you got to do a bunch of stuff just to be a write-in. I mean, it's really hard to be a candidate unless you're one of the two parties. Did Ohio was really gonna screw one of the parties? I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Well, it shouldn't happen if you've got some coordination between the Democratic officials at the state level and at the national level. And they certainly have big enough operations. I'm surprised that something like this happened and it didn't become, it wasn't an issue until the date was set for the convention, which was, you know, now what, a year and a half ago, probably. So somebody overlooked it. You know, somebody was not, you know, coordinating enough of that kind of stuff, which is pretty basic, I think. So it makes me, you know, wonder about the rest of the operation too.
Maybe we should go back to machines.
Imagine.
Did you guys, Mike, you were with me on that gig, weren't you? 72, when we went to all the different places and got the numbers and got paid for it?
No, Tom, I don't think I was.
I was the guy with the car. I remember driving people over to the damn place. We were all piled in the back seat. Was that Nixon who was 72? No, it was Ford, right?
Yeah, 72 was Nixon. Okay. Yes.
Nixon and McGovern, yeah.
So remember they had all these machines. Greg, this is old history to you. They actually had voting machines, right? Which, of course, you could change the name on those that morning if you wanted to, I suppose. And what they did is they gave everybody who wanted to do this, I think we got paid, was it $5 a precinct, $4 a precinct or something? All the money went to the dorm. So I carted I think I had one place, but everybody else had two or three, so I was just hustling people around. As soon as the polls closed at 6, you had an 800 number, and the idea was, the first thing they did was, is, you know, pull the curtain back and look at the back of the machine. The machine would say, you know, Mike Murphy, 50 votes, John Flanagan, you know, 49. So people would take that and they'd run to the phone and reverse the charges to whoever the people who were compiling the stuff. And you got paid to do this. And then they organized this all over the country just before people had cell phones and stuff. So the first thing you had to do when you went to the place is locate the paid phone. Then you'd dash up there and shove somebody out of the way and dial the 800 number so you didn't have to throw your quarters in the thing. And then we did that. It took a couple hours. I think we hit like 15 or 20 precincts. And we got like, you know, $5 a precinct or something stupid like that. It was interesting. Did you ever vote on a machine, you guys?
Oh, yeah.
I'm still voting on a machine.
Really? The one you can pull on the side?
Yes. No, it wasn't. It's not a pull. It's just, it reads the ballot. And
does it say Dominion on it?
Not Dominion. Well, you remember my stepfather was an interesting character. He says, hey, how about driving me to the polling place and taking me to work? And I said, okay. So I could take him to work. So I went out to, I was working at Allied Van Lines at the time. So I go in there and I'm picking the people. He goes, what are you doing in there? Just pull the Democratic lever. Let's go. Remember when you used to be able, do you remember the term straight ticket, Greg?
Yeah.
You can't vote a straight ticket anymore, can you?
That's no. Sexist.
Yes, you can, I think.
You can't hear. You got to punch every guy or girl or whatever. You can't just put all Democrat on the top and walk out. You used to be able to, in the right, it was like a slot machine. You'd hit the Democrat and you'd pull the thing and all the Democratic buttons would go down, right, Jen?
Yeah. I mean, it would be really easy today. You could just have a drop down menu, select all, you know, Democrat, yeah, all Republican.
I saw a funny shirt.
You can't do it that long.
A funny shirt that said, when I die, don't let me vote Democrat.
Oh, God. Well, it's what a, how much, I'll use the term opportunity or fear, should investors have? I mean, hey, we saw last Saturday, this election almost changed by what, an inch? And I sure as hell don't want to see anything like that again. But I tell you what, there isn't anything that's not on the table between now and November, is there? This time around, this is not a lock by any sort, doesn't appear. I mean, what's it going to do with the markets? What's it going to do with the dollar? I mean, Janet Yellen came out yesterday and said that the dollar is in danger. Well, if the dollar is in danger, she's the one who caused it. She's the one who put all the money in the system.
Why do we listen to these people?
I don't know. When Russell piles in, we're going to talk a little bit about that thing you sent out, Jan, about the Weimar Republic. And I think we should have really kind of a basic idea of what inflation is and how it happens. And that article that you talked about, you sent in, Jen, I don't know if you read it, Mike, but we have Russell on? Well, good, because I'm going to set the tone here. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I've just been listening.
Kind of setting the tone on it.
Don't want to ruin anybody's flow.
Yeah, well, on this inflation stuff, I mean, when you look at it, the basic, and I think most people don't understand sort of the basics of it. And the thing about that article Jan sent around, I thought it was really good history-wise, but they blame the central banks. Well, the reason why the central banks exist is because the politicians used to do it themselves, and then as a way to discipline themselves, they said, okay, we're going to have a central bank and then allegedly make them independent. But just picture how inflation actually works and money works. Well, let's make Mike the bad guy. Mike is the president. Somebody walks in, a constituent, and says, Mr. President, you know, I am having a rough time. Well, Mike, what could make it better? Well, how about $2,000? And the president whips off a little machine and hands Mike the 20 Benjamins, and off he walks. And you sit there and go, I just made Mike happy, his family's happy, everybody's happy. What did I do wrong? And maybe at that level, you didn't do anything wrong. But now John comes in, and now it's another $2,000. And that's another. And all of a sudden, the guy who sells burros or mules back in the day says, yeah, I used to get $10 a mule, and now these five guys walked in and just paid me $11. What the hell? And I went down to the bar, and this guy's paying 40 cents for a beer when it used to be 35. So the saloon keeper goes, well, look, 40 is the new price, and he raises it up. And all of a sudden, this kind of percolates its way through. And all of a sudden, some schlump like Russell or me come from outside 3 months later and go, why are the price of mules and beers up? Where did everybody get all this dough? I don't have it. But it comes into the system. I mean, people aren't printing it off like that necessarily, but they sort of are when the Fed writes a check for a bond, and then the check magically clears, right? I mean, it's essentially printing the money. Mm-hmm. So as it enters the system, it affects some people, it increases the demand someplace, and then all of a sudden somebody who isn't a benefactor of this says, boy, the prices are up all over the place. Now the Home Depot or the saloon keeper, he might actually be happy because he actually was able to raise his price. And there isn't another saloon in town, so he actually was able to raise his price 15%, even though his cost may only have gone up 5%. And some other guy is only going to raise it 5%, and his cost went up 10%. So it's amazingly uneven. But for the politician, or for the people who are sprinkling the infield, as we say, it's not a bad deal. So you've had this happen all throughout history. That's why I'm so pissed at these guys. And again, I started the show asking Jan and Mike if they think these people are doing this stuff. Is it just a mistake that under Trump, under Obama, the money supply was going up 8% for no reason? Was it a mistake for Trump under his to go up 40%? We had COVID, went up 40% in 2 years. Now this guy is supposed to be bringing it down, and he really isn't. When he knows he has to bring it down, so. Are these guys this dumb, or do they realize that it's uneven and their people are benefiting? I guess that's the question we'll never know. But just the routine of it, John and Russell, kind of take us through the Weimar situation and how they had this. They owed everybody, France and Britain, reparations for the war. They didn't have the money. So they said, okay, we'll just make more money. Wasn't that basically
just
it?
More money.
Was that basically it? And then all of a sudden, as you went through the article, now who benefited from this? Well, the farmers are sitting there going, okay, all of a sudden the price of milk and corn is going up, and I'm getting more money for that. By the way, my mortgage is fixed. All of a sudden my mortgage isn't anything. The prices have tripled in the last year, and my mortgage is now nothing because now I'm getting way more for it. So there's people that make money all along the way here that encourage it, and there's other people that don't. But Russell, how do you get that kind of runaway inflation? How does it get to be like 75% a month or something? How can you print that much dough? How does that even work? Is it all just credit?
Everybody reaches a point where everybody gets paid very, very frequently to keep up with how much the costs of everything are going up. And yeah, you gotta create those banknotes, I guess, or add zeros to them or whatever.
That's what happened in Zimbabwe, Tom.
Yep.
Mugabe did that, and it's happened in Nigeria also. They just keep printing money.
What happened in Turkey? Turkey's cutting it back, though.
Well, Turkey printed a lot of money, too, and, you know, we'll see that their economy is not the same as it was 5-10 years ago before Erdogan took power.
Well, I just went through their stuff yesterday. Their money supply 3 years ago was up 75% in 1 year, which is a lot. Then it was down, but they're down to a 25% increase. So actually they're sort of doing better, for lack of a better term. It should be what, 2 or 3? I
don't know how bad the Turkish economy is now. All I know is that Erdogan's party is in trouble, and he personally will use the strong arm tactics to stay in power. He's maintained his hold for quite a while now. I'd say a good 10 years at least.
I think he made himself head of the bank too at one point.
Well, you could be right, Russell.
I feel like at one point he became head of the central bank at the same time because he didn't like what those guys were doing.
Well, Russell, I have a little chart here. I don't think I was able to send it because it's one of the, I don't know. It has to do with the Weimar stock market. Now, if you think you're a genius because you've been long the market on the way up, which of course, you know, it's nice to be long and make money. I get that part. I do that for people all day. But if you think that the market's up because you bought stock, I'm looking at the Weimar stock market in 1921. It was at like $120. By 1922 in marks, it was 100 billion was the stock market. Now in U.S. dollars, it went from $20 up to 40, down to 20. So it wasn't up at all in anybody else's dollars, but in their own dollars. Now the thing here is we get everybody bamboozled. I think is because we are the main currency. We don't look at it like that. We don't look at the stock market being up 40%. It's not up 40% in relation to, gold. It's not up 40% in relation to Swiss francs, is it, Russell? I don't think so.
I thought there was a question. That was
no, I'm saying how do but how do you, the idea is that here we don't look at, and why not? I guess
no, we don't. Yeah, we wouldn't. We don't look. Well, I mean. I do when I'm looking at foreign, you know, if stock markets outside of the U.S., you want to make adjustments, and I use those examples in the classroom as well. To backtrack just a little bit, when you said, you know, how did these guys I think blame goes to both sides. They kept pumping money in the system, and your question was, why didn't they think this was going to lead to inflation? Well, that's because the last time we had inflation was in the 70s, and I think it was so far in the rearview mirror. But then also, you know, guys like you and me, we had been, you know, we were chicken littling the inflation stuff. You know, we kept talking about they can't keep doing this; it's going to catch up with us. And I feel like we repeated that line was repeated so many times. People were impervious to it. They just didn't think that was going to be a result of anything that anyone does. That inflation was never an issue anymore because we're in a modern economy or something like that. I have to teach inflation in one of the finance classes that I teach, and it's basically the same class at Loyola before I moved over to Kelly. I would get so much boredom and eye rolling when I'd start talking about inflation. It was ridiculous. I'm sorry that I ended up being right. But then the other, have you guys seen Biden claiming that he's that inflation was 9% when he got in office, yeah, and he's brought it down to 3?
He's in that, that he's not a, they use the CPI numbers, he's not all that wrong.
But he, so he's going to believe everything that he's done, or whatever he's done to make inflation come down. If he gets reelected, he's going to be able to keep doing whatever that was. I still don't know exactly what that was, and probably lead to a second bout of inflation.
Russell, one thing that struck me about reading that Epoch Times piece was how fast this spun completely out of control.
And yeah.
Do you attribute that to the fact that Germany's working population was so decimated that there was no way they were going to be able to produce their way into a recovery? And had it not been a war necessarily, although wars are the classic kind of setup for this, but if they hadn't had the draconian reparations and if they hadn't lost so many of their working population, would that have changed any piece of this? And what made it go up as fast as it did?
Well, the war reparations, I believe, were the main thing that they just decided to print a bunch of currency to make those payments, and that was one of the things that caught up with them.
Russell, didn't they actually think it was a success because they did renegotiate, right?
I think they were happy with it for the short. It was like happy short term, unhappy long term. How's that for a basic answer?
Well, I mean, I think you're right.
They got everybody's happy. You got us out of this, and then. The next result was pretty nasty way of life, for lack of a better way to put it. And they actually, in addition to the inflation thing, they also had everybody that had some extra money and needed to make extra money, they were pumping it into their stock market, and the people were buying stocks on 1% and 2% margin. So the second things turned, it was beyond just a blow up for the overall economy. It hit a lot of individuals in their pocketbook as well.
Well, they also little known kind of favor college thing. I don't know, but one of my clients actually had me into this for a little while. They were selling, Germans were selling bonds over here, gold backed industrial bonds.
Oh, they were, yeah.
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
And people were buying them. The money was going back to Germany. Germany was paying reparations to France and England, and in France and England were repaying their World War One debt to the U.S. government with money that started out here. How's that for a circle bleep?
It's a big old cycle.
Yeah. And now as soon as Hitler got in, he goes, we're not paying those bonds back. And today, till today, they've never paid them back, even though allegedly there was gold on deposit to back them. They've never paid them back. And the people here ended up getting screwed. They were sold here. Russell, what was before the CUSIP number? They actually had numbers here. They were like U.S. securities.
Huh.
And they never got...
I don't remember what the predecessor to...
Yeah, CUSIPs. I don't either.
I've been around for a while, but not that long.
But can you guys imagine that? They're selling bonds here. The money's going there, going to France and Britain, and going to our government. For money that originated here, nobody ever got the dough back.
That sounds like Bernanke telling us that a lot of the Fed stuff is just a balance sheet trick and it's not real.
Yeah. It's... it's interesting, Russell. You mentioned the rear view mirror. We've been having this kind of debate on the show. Well, I have this debate with my brother all the time. John and Mike know my brother real well. Terrific guy, real bright, but he's not as conspiratorial as I am. Let's put it that way. And I get this feeling that what shame fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm going to say that during the 60s and 70s, guys maybe didn't know what they were doing. They just were doing things to try and get us out of the World War or the Vietnam debt and blah, blah, blah. But then even then, you know, there were people like Milton Friedman around and said, wait a minute, this happened in this country, and this is always what happens. So even if he
But we're better than all those countries.
Yeah, but even if he cut those guys some slack.
And everybody knows that I'm, you know what I meant by that.
So. But those guys, even if you cut those guys some slack, you can't cut these guys some slack, because it did happen before here, and it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
And, you know, for the entire amount of 2007 to all during the Obama administration, after the crisis back then, we maintained a money supply growth of about 8.5% a year, when the economy might have been growing at 2. And all that inflation went into medical stuff, went into schooling, and went into housing, and the CPI kept telling us there wasn't any, basically. And there was.
Mm-hmm.
And how they got away with that, I don't know. And then all of a sudden COVID comes along, and there's your crisis, right?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's a big problem. But it already kind of was a problem. Because if you look at a hospital bill in 2007 versus, 2020, it already jumped dramatically. And we already had it. I mean, it's not like it wasn't already there. I mean, you and I were talking about that, Russell. I mean, it was already sneakily there. So the
you'd see it in place. We've seen it in places for a couple of decades, but it didn't. It didn't. I had my sticker shock moment the other day when I saw that the bag of Lay's potato chips was like $6.49 that my wife had brought home. I was like, the last I remember, it was half of that. So people don't start to get upset about it until you start to see, the numbers that are right in front of you every day. And when I mean people, I mean the general population. And that's gas, and then that's some stuff at the grocery store. Have consistent prices.
Well, Mr. Flanning is our wordsmith. I don't know if you heard yesterday, John. There's something weird about this inflation that I just I'm trying to put my peanut brain on, there's something about it that's different. I mean, I think the American people, like everybody, we're a pretty resolute lot. And most people have decided that they haven't been getting raises for a while, matching with their expenses, but they've, the wife's working or the husband's, whatever. We've managed to deal with all that. And maybe you go out a little bit less, maybe you do something, or you're eating chicken more than steak, whatever it is. But there's the stuff that's lurking around that you don't even know about. It's the puppy you picked up at the during COVID, and you find out that all of a sudden you need surgery, and it's 15 grand or something. It's the roof that you think might be 5, but it's really 12, or the air conditioner. I use the term I use the term shockflation. It's something you don't buy on a day-to-day basis, that you don't kill yourself at night going, oh man, what if the roof goes off? What if this goes up, or hot water here? You don't know that those are up 40% until it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're like ticking bombs in everybody's budget. And I've been trying to find a name for that, and I came up with shockflation after shock theater. But John, you can do better than that, I think.
I'll work on it, but I kind of like that.
You like it?
Because it is a shock, and it's something that in normal times isn't something that disrupts a family's economy to any great extent. I mean, maybe like you plan to put a roof on your house at some point, or you plan to buy a new car. You get this one fixed up or something, and you kind of know what you're dealing with price wise for all of that stuff, and have been traditionally been kind of in control of that, and that's gone out the window. I mean, even things like insurance expenses, for homeowners insurance or car insurance, isn't something that you can depend on anymore as having stability. It's just, and it's always, you wince when you run the tape at the grocery store. And lately, it's always a couple bucks more than I, expected in my most reckless mood about how expensive everything's gotten. It's always more than that. So people have this, cushion built in now where I don't know what it's going to cost. I know I can't afford it, but I got to buy it. So it's a terrible situation.
Well, the first case of that we heard was Dan Janitas, who's on vacation this week. And thank you guys for covering for Dan. What was the transmission bill on his Mercedes? 25 big ones?
Yeah, I
couldn't. Talk about shockflation.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, Dan's like, what the hell? That's a whole new car. What are we doing here? And he was not happy. But by the way, according to the CPI here, even though we all know that what Biden's talking about is crazy. The last year, their inflation is down to 3%. And if you look at his first year, which would have been, what, January of 2021, again, these are numbers that I criticize every day. So I'm just saying if we were running, we'd probably use the same ones that work to our favor, or else we wouldn't say anything, right? January 21 to January 2022, that number was 7%. So when he took over, now we go back the year before, Trump's last year, we'll go to 2020 to 2021. Again, these are numbers that I don't believe for a second, but this is what it says. Actually, 2020 to 2021 was 1%.
Yeah, it was COVID.
Oh, okay. All right.
I would say it's less demand. You know, inflation goes up either demand or supply side, and I think at that point it was a demand side type thing.
Well, that's right, because gas went way down, right? Because nobody's buying gas and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
which means it was cheaper to get what little we could buy around, and it just worked its way through.
But if we work for either one of these guys, we could pick a month or pick a number to make them look good, when the overall number is kind of messed up. But once in a while, you'll see somebody will put something out and they'll say, "Here's the real inflation numbers," and they'll pick a year from, whatever. Where are we? 2024. They'll say, "Here's where we were in 2014." And here's where we are today, and here's I'll get the number, 2024 from 2014, the total inflation, what these guys say. And then they'll say, wait a minute, here were houses back then, here where they are now, it's like 40%. Or here were cars then, and here where they are now, it's like 40%, or education. The CPI doesn't match up with any of that stuff. It just doesn't, unfortunately. And what do you think, John, Mike, do you think once in a while there should be just a revision to it? So at least we start out even, where we say, okay. How long are we going to go with the housing?
I thought they did redo the CPI basket like every couple of years.
Well, they redo the basket, but they're never going to say, hey, in the last 5 years we've got rent up 15%. It's really up 50. I mean,
a catch up with the honesty on the numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That never happens, does it?
You have to come up with another inflation measure and start putting that one out there instead.
All right.
Well, the story.
If you really want it, somebody else is going to have to do it. I guess that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how you can reset these, but certainly, like in housing, I think the story of what's really going on isn't in the numbers themselves. It's in when you start comparing certain numbers against others. So that when you see that whatever the median home price is now, that's based on sales of houses, and the market of sold houses is so tipped in favor of the high end that is a highly misleading figure. If you compare it to the number of sales and the number of sales below a certain number, you get a picture where the market is in deep trouble. The people who are in the market for a $200,000 house can't find one or afford one, these interest rates, and the people want to buy $1 million house and have cash in their pocket don't care about the interest rates, and that's why the median home price is hovering close to $500,000. But that isn't the story. That isn't at all what the picture is for most people. So you have to compare it to other numbers that tell a pretty gruesome one.
Well, it's actually what, 411, the last median number, right?
411, yeah. It was up higher than that, like 480 at one point.
Well, what did you think of what Audrey said on Monday regarding, Audrey's in the business, so it's accurate, but what do you make of it, where she said the people that used to be able to afford a house at 400,000 or 4.25 at 4% interest are now down in the 350,000, 3.25 range because of the rate, and they're now essentially competing with the first-time home buyers who were there in the first place.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
and that
market is, that's the one that's really screwed up, because the people who have those houses can't sell and find anything affordable, so they're hanging on to them. That deprives the market of inventory in an affordable price range, which it's starting to slam the door shut for sellers and buyers. So.
Well, if we were in the 200,000,
just along those lines, real quick, I saw yesterday that a lot of the home builders are focusing on the smaller size houses now, because that's where they're seeing, you know, a lack of supply demand balance.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which then macro wise, does that mean that, you know, who in a couple of years, whoever our next president is going to be able to say, hey guys, look, I brought the cost of housing down.
Yeah.
That's going to be, if you start to project forward on what the impacts are.
There are those talking points, like your daughter mentioned, Russell. Talking points.
Yeah.
if you're ready to pony up, if you want to buy a house at 2.25, where am I going? Alabama?
Hey,
if you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
I mean, we're not talking, you know, a bungalow anywhere. I mean, Audrey.
No.
Got one she's selling in the city, and she's talking 3.5 for a bungalow in a decent neighborhood. I mean, wow, that's a number.
You know, even if you have a $200,000 house that you take good care of and, you know, it's paid off, let's say, and you want to, you know, downsize or upgrade or move up, at whatever, even though you're walking around with $200,000 in cash, assuming you can find a buyer for that house, what are you going to do with that $200,000 if you? Where are you going to find a house like the one you gave up? And where, you know, if you need repairs on it, or if you have to, you know, get a pay more for it and get a mortgage at 6.5%, why? You're not going to do that. You're going to sit. You're going to wait. Maybe wait 20 years.
Well, yeah. It's a. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the solution to that is. I mean, that's why when you see people like Nancy saying right now, she could probably put you in a house cheaper than the rent because people don't want the risk.
Yeah, yeah.
You wonder how long that's gonna sort of last. Because rent is, to a certain extent, if you're making money with the rest of your cash, I mean, there shouldn't be that much of a. Well, I'll dig into this for a second, but there really shouldn't be that much of a premium on owning versus on renting, right? I mean, if the economics works out properly, you should be able to rent for a bunch of years and. And that gets screwed by not owning, right? But that hasn't been the case for a long time.
Right. It was always heresy, you know, not to be throwing your money in a landlord's lap instead of putting it into your house and building equity. This is always the mantra that people bought into.
By the way, John, Kevin, Kevin, despite you're liking shockflation, he likes shaftflation better.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, that's like that. That cuts to the bone.
Or how about brokeflation? He's got a few here. Brokeflation. I don't know if that rolls off the tongue too well, but shaftflation. What do you think, Mike? Oh, you're out. You're shafted. I don't see how in the midst of this campaign any of this stuff, any of this bus gets turned around. And are we pushing toward this European model where a few people have all the money? It looks like we're there, doesn't it?
Kind of feels like it.
Yeah.
It's tough to dispute that. I think that's why all of us were pausing. It's like, how do you dispute that?
Yeah, how do you dispute it? I mean, what happens? I mean, the only other time we got to this level of inequality and money was in 1929, and I don't think any of us wants that sort of a recoil, which leads me into, Russell, what do you make of yesterday? With the tech stocks all of a sudden, it was a combination. Which do you think was worse, the Biden announcement or the Trump announcement? I mean, they were both kind of piled on, didn't they? Biden saying they're going to look harder on the people sending chips to China, and Trump's people saying that Taiwan's on their own, they better start ponying up for a military or something?
Both those don't help out tech, but... I heard you mention NVIDIA before I came on, and the big NVIDIA chips aren't supposed to be making their way to China anyway. I mean, they are, but they're really not supposed to be making their way over to China as it is. And, you know, I think Taiwan is pony. I think that's just an erroneous statement. They do pay, you know, we do sell them an awful lot of stuff. I don't know if we sell it to them at a discount, but they take care of themselves. I think the only area that there's been a bit of deficiency, and it has come around probably, you know, Trump can claim that he has forced the hand on all the NATO countries, and that's why they're ponying up what they should have been doing all along for their defense, and we hadn't been subsidizing their defense. But, you know, that's kind of like, I'm standing there against a gang of toughs, and I'm saying, all right, I'll fight all of you. And they all start to run away because they look behind me and they see a whole bunch of my guys coming at them. They do just the same sort of thing in Europe where, the U.S. is here to help us out, but, we see Putin starting to work his way in our direction. We're going to have to start paying up to, we got to start preparing for ourselves. I mean, even Japan is spending more on defense than they have since. I think they changed their constitution so they could spend more on defense because of what's going on over there.
Well, who's buying?
But I don't think everybody spending more on defense has anything to do with Trump. I think it has to do with fear.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, who's Australia's buying submarines from Japan or Japan's buying them from Australia? But aren't they both?
No, Australia's buying them from us.
I thought Japan's making some too, or somebody's making some.
Well, and what we've done is we have basically the best tech in that area, and we're selling a couple. But then, that group will work into having their own capability of creating their own as well.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the long term plan with the submarine thing, and there's a big lead time on building a submarine.
Oh, yeah,
we're talking about things that aren't even going to be in place until the 30s.
Yeah, it's got to be once you start one, the ones that come after them are probably 2-3 years, but to get the first one going is got to be a decade.
Yeah, it's that whole thing with we're gonna supply in one way or another, and facilitate Australia having the high end submarines. A big portion of that is it's not going to come to fruition for years down the road. It'll probably be, if they show up and they break the bottle, it'll probably be on the sub. It'll probably be two presidents from now.
Well, what is everybody, not to get in, we have a couple of minutes here before Di comes on. Jen, if you want to hang around and help me out with Di, that'd be great.
I'm going to have to run, actually, but I'm talking to you, Russell.
Are you going jogging?
Yeah.
You're going jogging?
Oh, please.
what, when we say they're building submarines, does anybody, if there is, God, I hope there isn't. If there is some kind of a shooting war with China, do we think submarines, are going to be part of it? I mean,
the idea with the submarines, do you know what the second island chain is? It's basically Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines.
Okay.
All of the, if you're looking at a map of China and you look to the right, going in our direction, there are all these different islands and all these different nations. So they're, there are only so many ways that China can get out into the Pacific Ocean, and if you have just a handful of submarines, you basically can block all those passages. And that's why submarines are so important. If we're gonna, if we think the next shooting war, direct shooting war, not through proxies, is us and China, and we don't want them to be able to get out into the Pacific and start to make their way toward us.
So they
and
might
we
be.
We can block them right there, and that's probably the biggest. The thing. Have you seen the thing with the Philippines and China where, the Chinese Coast Guard showed up with axes, and was threatening the Philippine guys that were supposed to be resupplying a boat that they have grounded so that they can claim a certain part of the South China Sea. China claims that the whole South China Sea basically belongs to them. If you look on a globe, especially a globe that was made in China, there are this 9 dashes that go out into the South China Sea, and that is supposed to represent China's territorial waters.
Well, they also put a couple of islands out there too, right, to make it seem like it's theirs.
Well, they were building artificial islands, and they said it was just for peaceful purposes. And of course, when you look at a satellite picture of one now, it's got a couple of airstrips with fighter jets on it, and a great place to dock a few boats. The funny part is those islands are sinking.
Oh, good.
And I saw a 60 Minutes thing. 60 Minutes Australia. It's the freaking best. They're just so much more straightforward. And I saw a 60 Minutes Australia thing about those islands that are being built. And they had a quick soundbite from a U.S. a U.S. admiral who just basically said, oh, well, shooting war starts, those two islands are gone, you know, first thing.
Well, Russell, so we don't have much time here, but a real quick question kind of leading into next Wednesday when you're on it. If China implodes, despite people here saying it's no big deal, we have to have all kinds of people here with all kinds of investments over there and dollar investments. It can't be good for us.
You know what?
Economically,
you invested in China, you deserve to lose your money.
Okay.
You do. If you tried to invest in China and you start to, because you and I interacted with groups that were trying to build businesses over there when they would come over and they promised when we were helping train people from different exchanges over there. We're going to license your VIX from you. We're going to, we're going to pay you for this. We're going to pay you for that. And we helped train them basically at cost. Never heard anything else from them.
Oh, no.
A guy that both of us knows for years went over to China and did paid for classes. And he would get paid in yuan. And that money is still sitting in a bank account over in China.
We also know somebody used to
get it out.
We also know somebody used to buy soybeans and stuff for them, and if the price went down on the way over, they'd cancel while the ship was on the way.
But if you're investing in China right now, if you said any money, you deserve for it to just go down a black hole, in my mind.
Oh, well. All right, we'll continue that on Wednesday. We got a quick break here. When we come back, we should have Diane Kelly talking about Fisher House, which is a good thing people do instead of some of the bad stuff. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 115. We got to go up, 300 to make a Fibonacci retracement in the NASDAQ. I don't know if we're going to do that. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. People were long some of the tech stocks yesterday. Must feel like they want to play this song today. What do you think? But not today. We're bouncing back. S&P Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 122. Dow Futures down 49 as compares to yesterday, where the Dow was up 243. S&P down 78. That's 1.4%. NASDAQ, whack, down 512. 2.8%. Worst day since 2022. We'll go through this quick because we have Diane waiting. DAX up 52. FTSE up 55. CAC around up 53. So rally across the board over in Europe. Asia, Nikkei down 971, 2.4%. almost under 40,000, 40,126. Hang Seng, a little bit of a bounce, up 39, 17,778. Shanghai up 14, that's our best day in quite a while. 29.77, maybe going to make it back to 3,000, we will see. Bonds, up 2 basis points here, 1 basis point on the Bund, so not much going on there. Oil, down 10 cents, 82.75, back up to the high end of that range. Brent down 20 cents, 84.88. Natural gas up a penny. RBOB unchanged, 249. Gold up 9.30, 24.69. Boy, it'd be something if it gets to 2,500. Silver up 21 cents, 30.89. Copper down 9 cents, 4.31. Copper hasn't been doing as well as the other metals lately. It had been leading them, but not anymore. Foreign exchange, euro unchanged, 109. British pound unchanged, 129.8. They're both kind of high, meaning the dollar's kind of low. Crypto up 314. Bitcoin crypto, 64,982. You want to do a little quick weather? Well, there's no sports really to think of, is there, other than the Bears sign their guy.
Bears sign their guy. Quick weather, 70 in Chicago, high of 72 today. Phoenix, 92 now, high of 115. And heat warning there, dehydration and heat stroke. That's all I got, Chief.
And careful if you're walking barefoot on the sidewalk, you burn your tootsies.
Yeah, not as bad as Dubai, though, or...
Vegas.
With the heat index was 140 something. I think it was the Emirates or Dubai or somewhere.
I talked to a dude last night whose sister lives in Las Vegas. A lot of asphalt there, and she stepped on the asphalt, went to burn her foot, so she fell and landed on her forearm. She's got like asphalt burns on her forearm, like if she was like tarred and feathered, for God's sake. In the emergency room, we get they had to figure out a way to get the asphalt out of her forearm. It was kind of melting. Do we have the wonderful Diane Kelly? Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Good to hear your cheery voice. How are things going over at Fisher House? I'm sure under your control, they're doing fine.
Well, thank you so much. We are rolling along. We're so excited. The new Fisher home at Great Lakes Naval Base is up and running. I mean, not for business yet, but we have the elevator chef in, the concrete is being laid, and we are hoping that this house will be open at the end of December and ready to take military families January 2025.
So that's pretty close.
Yep, it is. It's amazing how, I mean, it's like, wow, it's almost August, so it's kind of like the days just keep flying by, don't they?
And you got some good, I mean, we're not talking government work. The people show up every day and they're working.
Right.
what's the capacity going to be?
16 rooms for families. So, this Great Lakes Naval Base is going to be very different for Illinois, because Hines VA in Maywood really only takes veterans, but Lovell will take active duty, because Great Lakes is one of the largest active duty areas in our country. So there will be active duty and veterans able to stay at Fisher House, because if you're in the hospital there, if you're using the Great Lakes medical facility, the families are eligible to stay at the Fisher House home at Great Lakes for absolutely no charge, however long they need it.
So somebody could get hurt at Great Lakes in training or something.
Of course. That's where we're going to be, you know, soliciting funds to help fund the Great Lakes Naval Fisher House, because let's say that one of the active duty, you know, maybe they're 20, 21, younger, they're hurt, they're in the medical facility, their families get a call, their family lives in Florida, Louisiana, New York, whatever. They are called immediately to come, you know, to their loved one, and they are able to stay at the Fisher House home free of charge to take care of their family member and not have to worry about anything, because the most important part is to take care of their family member that's in need. So that's what we're there for our family members, to give them peace of mind whenever a loved one is in the hospital.
Hey, if you guys weren't around, what would happen? The veterans group has nothing at all even remotely I won't say competing, but it
all. Well, you know, I really couldn't say this. Fisher House Hinds has been in business for 15 years, and before that, people were just on their own to try to, you know, find lodging wherever they could. Now, we basically spent about 10 grand last year covering hotel rooms for Hinds families because no one is turned away. So if the Fisher House rooms are filled, we have to pay for hotel rooms. So we find surrounding hotels locally that we can set them up in and take care of that. But I don't know. I know there's the Navy Lodge hotel up at Great Lakes, I guess, is a facility that the medical facility will, the social worker will try to help get them a special room and, you know, give them a discount or something like that. But Dr. Buckley, who is in charge of the medical facility at Great Lakes, is so excited about this. He said, I've been needing this for over 6 years. I've been asking for a home. So he finally got his wish, and we're excited.
What, I was not about to go down this line of questioning, but as usual, you lead me to a spot, you open up a whole new door for me. What happens to somebody who's, you know, happens to be on a destroyer someplace, the thing hits a huge wave, the guy's going up the step and he lands and he breaks a hip or something,
send them to the closest medical facility for treatment as soon as possible. So wherever the closest facility for them to get care will be where they're taken care of, then they may send them closer to their base. And then, you know, it could be California, it could be San Diego, then they could be moved to Illinois for care. And then also they could be moved closest to where their family member lives. But it really has to do with the facility or the care that the veteran or the military personnel is in need of. So for instance, Hinds VA, Blind Center, kidney transplant, paralyzed need. Texas is a burn center, so they would, if there's burns, they would probably go to Texas because that's the best burn center. So it really depends upon the area of expertise that is needed. So,
but I mean, if you're on a destroyer in the Mediterranean, you're probably going to ship you to a base there. Is there a Fisher House at that base where somebody from the parents here can go to, they have the money to fly over and see their kid, or they have to wait till he comes back here?
Well, we have a Fisher House in London and we have a Fisher House in Germany.
Really?
Okay. So if they're in the Mediterranean, they may go to London or they may go to Germany. And yes, we would ship them. We would help their families get to a Fisher House and they would stay.
Now, those people are active duty. They're not vets. They're active duty.
Exactly. They're active duty. And active duty members are eligible for Fisher House homes. Yes.
So what, in terms of financing, you guys, I know you it's coming up, I hope we didn't miss it, like a golf outing and stuff, but do you have a general, you know, place where if somebody wanted to buy people always like to buy stuff, can I dial up an internet and get myself a Fisher House hat for $50 and do something that way, or is there an ongoing way to, or do you have to wait for an event, I guess is my question.
Well, you can go online and donate, and that would be www.fofil.org. That's our website, and you can go on there, and, you know, there's ways if you can donate. You can just give us a donation. There's a memorial fund that if you wanted to honor a loved one that has passed, you can do a donation to Fisher House. We don't sell merchandise. We pretty much give it away for anybody that gives us a donation. I would like to...
Well, that's kind of what I meant.
I want to work on a program where if you can give us a dollar a day, to feed these families and house them at Fisher House. We've got a program for, you know, give us a dollar a day to help support military families at Fisher House. So I'm working on that. But the one thing that I was, you know, kind of immediate attention is our Tee Off for Veterans Classic Golf event, which is Monday, August the 19th, 7 a.m., four-man scramble at Schaumburg Golf Course. Foursome is $680. If you don't want to golf, maybe you want to donate a foursome for a military family group or military veterans to join us for golfing. You can do that. You can put it in, you know, your name and donate it to a group. And there's a pig roast, silent auction. I have a weekend getaway at Galena with $500 spending money, and just a lot of fun, a really, really fun day. And, you know, we have a lot of veterans that come in, and, you know, our board is there.
Just, we're linking that in the show notes.
Okay. Oh, Greg, you said Greg says we're putting all this in the show notes for today.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, guys. So, that's it. I know you guys are busy, and I really appreciate you letting me come on and share our story.
If you don't have to dash, I'd like to know more what's going on. I mean, I guess unless you want to talk about the market, it was down yesterday. What else do you want to say? And it's up today, so there you go.
No, I don't. You're the experts on the markets, but
You know what, Diane? We don't feel like experts the way it's jumping around now. I guess we've seen it all before, so we have a little bit of a leg up. But I would never have guessed yesterday. You know, just a couple of political statements, and you're like, holy, that's a lot.
It goes up and down, right?
How successful has what does it take to get a good donation thing going? I mean, I know golf outings are a lot of fun. I also have friends that people who I'll say they're pretty busy guys, and they're in politics and stuff. Everybody sends them a thing for a golf outing. You know, it's and that's, and I love them, by the way. But now, you know, Marist has one. These guys have one. Every you know.
And you're right. There are a ton of golf events, and it's a little competitive out there. But this is, you know, our fourth year of doing it, and you know, every year we get more golfers signing up. So it's turning out to be a very good fundraiser for us. You know, fundraisers are probably one of the best ways of raising money, but you know, you're always at the mercy of people wanting to come, and you know, everybody seems to be so busy, and a lot of times it's just easier for somebody to give a donation because they don't have time to come to an event. After this golf event, I'm going to probably work on a capital campaign for Lovell. We need to get Lovell up and running as far as having reserve money. It's about $107,000 a year to manage that money, which means that that's strictly food, you know, supplies to keep the house running.
Somebody cooks dinner every night and breakfast, or how does that work?
Yes. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner are there for them. You know, I always tell people, this is what you have to think about. Pretend that, you know, you have a son, a daughter, a nephew, your father, you know, somebody that is in the military. All of a sudden you get a phone call, and they're in the hospital. They haven't given you details of what's happened. You're out of the state. You need to get on a plane. You need to come and be with your loved one that you have no idea what's happened. They haven't given you details. And you get to the hospital. You see your loved one, whatever the doctor's telling you. And then they ask you, do you have a place to stay? Where are you staying? And it's like, I don't know. I don't have a place. The social worker is there. Hospital is there to tell you you can have a place at Fisher House to stay. So you get the paperwork through, you get to go to Fisher House, you are so exhausted from all the adrenaline and the trauma, and you get to put your head on a clean, beautiful room pillow. You fall asleep. You wake up because of the stress, kind of, and you get up and you walk around. You want some hot tea, hot cocoa, a cookie. You're in the kitchen. It's your home. It's your home for as long as you need it. That's what Fisher House is. And if you figure that a really nice hotel room is about $300 a night, you know, if you're there for a week, that's the cost. So 16 rooms, that's kind of where you have to think about. You guys are mathematics, you know what the cost factor yep. is. And so that's what we're talking about. And then if those rooms are filled, I have to find hotel rooms outside of Fisher House to cover. So again, that's another, you know, 3 or 4 days or a week of $300 outside of Fisher House.
Well, Di, is there a bifurcation in the money raising? When I say a bifurcation, it's like you said something, $107,000. Let's say that you're. That's your number for the year. I gotta believe that you guys are working pretty efficiently if that's your number for the year, but let's say it is. On one level, you want people to come to the golf outing and send in some send in some money for the $107,000. Is there a separate or somehow combined campaign that said, you know, if we can somehow get $2 million in a capital fund, even if you know, somebody like me puts it in T-bills for the year at 5%, okay, you're talking, the 100 grand is right there, right?
Exactly. And so you know that I was just voted in as president of Fisher House, Illinois, and I started this presidency in January of 2024 this year. So I'm kind of like, you know, the official president. When we're voting on a new president, I will be out. My four-year term will be gone. But my goal and direction for this board, I want to bring this organization up to $500,000 organization. And we need that. And to, you know, to your point, I'm looking at, you know, an endowment fund or areas of where we can put money in and have the interest or whatever that helps us. So as far as, you know, our budget, if you look at two houses, it's more like $230,000 a year on a budget to run these two homes. But I definitely need to have reserves with things that will come up. You know, you never know about things that come up. And it doesn't always account for the hotel rooms that we may have to put out extra. But our administrative cost is only 18%. So, you know,
that's really light.
Exactly, and I'm trying to keep it that. So,
but you also have, not to interrupt, but you also have the place is going to be brand spanking new. Okay, now, still, I mean, you're a bright lady. You know that somewhere, somebody's got to be putting something in the cookie jar for a year and a half from now. Somebody's going to have to go out and buy all new sheets and all new beds and everything else. So, I mean, it's not like there isn't some ongoing maintenance because you've got people coming and going. I mean, with the wear and tear. Even if everybody's really nice, is way more than a normal house.
Absolutely, and you're spot on. And that exact what's happening with Hines. We had to replace the mattresses last year. That was about $65,000 with all the mattresses and new bed. And now they're looking at new dining room furniture. I had a call the other day. Their Sub-Zero refrigerator was leaking, and we were so paranoid we were going to have to buy another $12,000 new.
I was going to say they're $12,000, easy, yeah.
Yeah, Sub-Zero refrigerator, but we got the Sub-Zero people to come out, and it was only $1,200 to fix it. So, you know, it's think about running a big house and rooms in the wear and tear, and you know, 365 days of the year, 24/7. So, Lovell, you're right. It's a brand new home. We will have a couple years of, rest where we won't have to do too many things, but we do have to build two sheds because Fisher House, when they build these homes, they strictly use them as living room, kitchen, dining room, hotel rooms, and sitting rooms. There's a washer and dryer area, but there's really no storage. So we have to build a couple of storage areas, two sheds, for Lovell. When it basically, we'll probably look at it in the spring of next year. I don't think we're going to be able to do it this year.
Are you guys, if somebody says, boy, this dye is terrific, I'm going to drop her 10 mil. Okay, now if somebody did that, are the Illinois group separate? Do you have to pony some of that to the rest of the Fisher people, or do they give you support? Are you totally independent, Fisher Illinois? Is it set up as a corp or whatever?
I mean, we are an independent 501(c).
Okay.
And so there are 34 Fisher homes throughout the country. And the Fisher House Foundation is the national foundation, which is like our corporate foundation. But Fisher House Foundation, their job is to go in, build the homes, get it up to par, take care of everything, work with the Veterans Administration, and turn it over, the keys over to the VA. The employees that work in these homes are Veterans Administration employees. Right. So we are a separate entity. Our job is to run these homes and make sure that they are up to par.
So they give you the capital budget, basically, or the capital, they build a place, and then it's on you.
Exactly. So once they build the home, turn the keys over, they walk away, they go on to the next project.
You know, that's a nice setup, I think, don't you?
Well, it's fine. We're not, you know, as Fisher House Foundation, I'm going to a conference next week to go through. I'll be there all week going, all the 34 states come together, we all come together, and they go through their, you know, like any corporation, tell us what we need to do, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. But every state is run on a separate 501(c), because you know this, Tom, every state has different laws and taxations.
Oh, yeah.
And different. So we are a separate state of Illinois. We run our homes under our 501(c) for the state of Illinois.
What is there anybody that's just gagging? I mean, is there a Fisher home of, you know, I don't know why I'd say this, but like of Arkansas that just can't make it? And then what happens to those guys?
Well, there's a Fisher House in Missouri that is having a really difficult time because they don't have enough board members, and they're just kind of struggling. And quite honestly, Tom, I don't know what to tell you on that, because I'm struggling on my own way here. I'm trying to get my own board together, it's hard because, you know, I have people on my board. They all work, and they've got families. Everybody's busy. You know, I am the president. I have a treasurer who is a retired Navy officer, and she is the treasurer, but she also works part-time. Her and I are our main, you know, we're the ones that are getting a little bit of payment for doing this job, but everybody else is volunteer. And you really, I can only ask my board to do so much.
But they're not paying, you're
really
not paying
good.
You like they would for a Samoyed. For those that don't know, Dai is a full-fledged sommelier, knows more about wine than anybody else has ever even dreamed of. And you're doing this because you like to. That's amazing.
My passion, yeah. Wine and food. I love pairing wine and food together. So that's a fun thing that I like doing.
Well, most people do that. They have a, you know, a chunk of food and a glass of wine, and a sip of wine. They pair it together.
Yeah.
So we're gonna put you on our site as to how to get some money. I'll try and get some people at least maybe to give up some, you know, if somebody wants to donate a foursome, that'd be terrific, because you'll find the four people, right? There'll be veterans or
exactly.
something?
Exactly. We'll get the veterans. And Tom, I also would like to put my name out there and my phone number. If anybody has any questions, please call me. My phone is never turned off. I'm always available. So 312-315-6729.
All right. I don't know if we'll put that on the site, but we'll do the best we can, and we'll have you on again. We should be able to get you on one more time before the golf outing.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Tom. I appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Well, for the
I'll
people,
talk to you soon.
Well, the people whose golf game's gotten as horrible as mine, the idea that it's a scramble is probably a tempting thing. Then, even if you're horrible, you can be in a scramble.
Yeah, it's a four-man scramble, but you have to be out there at 7 a.m. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Well,
but you're up at 5.
I know, but I got to do the show. You know, type of thing.
It's right.
Anyway, great having you. Always good, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Tom.
S&P futures up 16.
Later. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem. S&P futures up 16. NASDAQ futures are 148. See what the market does today until we have a bounce back. Hopefully we don't go down again. Whatever it is, we'll talk about it tomorrow morning.
And that's how she wrote.
That's all, folks.